At its most basic level, it really is a Jekyll and Hyde city. I mean, Robert Louis Stevenson, who wrote Jekyll and Hyde, grew up here. And I think he saw the two sides of the city, but he saw them in terms of the physicality. There had only been the Old Town, the stretch of Edinburgh between the castle and the palace at Holyrood. That had been the original city. But then that became overcrowded in the 18th century, it became very unsanitary, and the wealthy people didn't like the fact that they were having to live cheek by jowl with the poorest people. And so they put a competition out to design a new town, and it was duly built, starting at Princes Street and then heading north into what we now think of as the new town. And there was a physical barrier between the two. There was a loch, a lake, which later was drained and became Princes Street Gardens. So you had this rationally laid out, rationally planned new town versus this chaotic old town. And that really was the two sides of human nature that Stevenson saw when he was writing Jekyll and Hyde. And as a young man, he would tiptoe out of his parents' house in the new town and creep up the hill to the old town to cavort with the prostitutes and the vagabonds and the drunks and the poets. So he was attracted to both sides. He grew up in one city, but he was attracted to the other side of the city. And it is still that city. It's a city of that you think you know. When you visit it, you think you know it because so much of it is on the surface. The castle, the various hills, the craggy outcrops, the sea, the monuments, the museum. So much of it is visible. But there's another city lurking just hidden away from view that you've got to work out a little bit harder to find. And that's the city I like to explore, and that's the city I write about.
You say you like to explore that side of the city. When you're gathering material for your stories, how do you do it? Do you just go and walk the streets? Do you go into the bars? How does it work?
Well, all different ways of gathering material for stories. People tell me stories. I get those mostly in bars and cafes. Someone you've never met sidles up to you and says, hey, I've got a great story for you. 99 times out of 100, they don't. But one time in 100, they have got something worth that's interesting or something worth looking into a bit further. I read the newspapers. I'm a news hound. Walking around the streets, just listening, sitting in cafes and bars, listening to people, watching them. You know, I mean, novelists basically suck the souls from real people and start to piece them like a jigsaw, piece them with other aspects of people to make characters and to make events happen. And Edinburgh happens to be a great city just to explore on foot because it's small, it's contained. A city of 500,000 people, but it feels like a village, or it feels like a series of very small interconnected villages. And you can walk around, I know this because I've done it, you can walk around a lot of Edinburgh in a day. You know, I mean, you can get a great sense of the city in one day, and you can't do that really so much in New York, you can't do it so much in London, you can't do it in a place like Athens. But in a city the size of Edinburgh that is ringed in by the sea and by hills, you know, two sides are water, one side Pentland Hills. So it's a city that can't really grow much bigger than it already is physically. So it's a nice city to walk around, and it's a city that is very inspirational to me as a writer.
You talked about the Edinburgh of Robert Louis Stevenson and Jekyll and Hyde, the old town and the new town. Where does that dichotomy exist now in the city? Where you know, if you were to think of the areas that are the obvious Edinburgh on the one hand and the underbelly on the other, what springs to mind?
Well, the centre of the city is well tended, well looked after, well policed. You could visit as a tourist or as a business visitor to central Edinburgh and you would get no sense of all the problem housing estates that ring the city at a distance that were mostly built in the 50s and 60s. You have to go a couple of miles out from the centre of town to start seeing, to get a sense of that. You can get a sense of it down in Leith. Although Leith has been gentrified, the Leith of train spotting still does exist in small pockets. And so you can actually get a sense of the kind of the haves and the have-nots very quickly just by going to Leith. And you can jump, within a few yards, you can jump from a Michelin restaurant to one of the roughest bars you'll ever encounter in your life. And so you do get the two sides of Edinburgh there. You get the prima miss Jean Brodie, the very genteel, gentrified Edinburgh, the middle class, upper middle class Edinburgh, rubbing shoulders with the Edinburgh of Trainspotting, the Edinburgh of Dispossessed.
Jean Brodie would have probably picnicked round about here, wouldn't she, on the links?
Jean Brodie almost certainly brought her schoolgirls to the links because, well, the school that Muriel Spark was schooled at is just next to Brunsfield Links, Gillespie's. She would. I'm sure she would have brought them here. But in the book, famously, she takes them for a walk down to the grass market, which at that time was incredibly rough, which is where all the unemployed would hang out. And of course, the girls are staggered to find this other side to Edinburgh, that it's not just about posh private schools and parents with good jobs, that there's an Edinburgh of public drunkenness and brawls and tension and smatterings of violence. So Jean Brodie's a pretty good book at telling you there's more to Edinburgh than meets the eye.
Obviously some of the secrets, this kind of underbelly or this unseen part of the city, but there are little secret gems as well, aren't there, that are things of beauty or things that can be kind of cherished in the city, but very few people know about them, or maybe only people who live in those communities know about them. Are there any that you particularly like?
You ought to actually see the Edinburgh that you probably wouldn't see if you just arrived at Waverley Station, grabbed yourself a hotel and decided to go and see the sites that are usually seen, the castle and Holyrood Palace and what have you. If you want to get a little bit further afield, places that maybe the tourist doesn't know about and doesn't go so much, wander down Queensferry Street, which is at the west end of Princes Street, until you come to Bellsbrae, which takes you down into Dean Village. Dean Village, basically warehouses that have been converted into flats, old mills. There used to be about 7 water mills down there to make all the flour for all the bakeries of Edinburgh. It was controlled housing. A lot of the housing down there was actually built by factory owners, by men who wanted to control the workforce. So, for example, you won't find any bars, any pubs in Dean Village. It was a dry village. Once you're down there, you're actually on the water of Leith, hence the amount of water mills that used to be there. And the water of Leith, is a river that snakes through Edinburgh, but it's very seldom visible. But you can walk along the banks there in an eastward direction until you reach Stockbridge, which is another little village in the new town. You can keep going until you hit Leith. So you can walk all the way down this river and you'll see a different side to Edinburgh. You'll be looking up at a precipitous city. Robert Louis Stevenson described Edinburgh as a precipitous city. And when you're in Dean Valley or when you're walking along the water of Leith, you're looking up at 6, 7, 8, 9-storey buildings that are towering way above you. And you get a sense of this Edinburgh being a place of highs, and incredible highs and incredible lows. You don't really get a sense of the way the High Street, the Royal Mile, used to be unless you maybe walk down towards the station and look up and start counting the levels. You know, how many levels does this building have? Because what they did in the old days, when it was just the old town, it was no new town, was they just kept building an extra story on top of a building, and they would keep building and building and building. And because they didn't always build them very well, they would say that you could be at the top story of one building, open your window and shake hands with your neighbour across the way, because they were getting so close to the buildings across the street. But then if they started to collapse because they were building them too high and they structurally couldn't take it. And there's a famous story of one building collapsed in itself, and they were, pulling all the stones away, and they heard this faint cry from below, "Heave a wall, lads, I'm no dead yet. You know, keep going, guys, I'm not dead yet." And if you walk down the Royal Mile near Geoffrey the Kiltmaker, there's one of the closest that leads down there, one of the alleyways leading down, there's a little stone relief above the alleyway, above the mouth of the alley, with the words, "Heave a wall, lads, I'm no dead yet," which was the site of the original building. It's a city where you can miss a lot. If you're walking too briskly, or if you're not pausing, if you're not looking up, I mean, all these wonderful closes that go off the Royal Mile, countless little alleyways, little dark, spooky places that tourists often look and say, "Oh, I'm not going down there. It looks a bit dangerous, or it looks a bit dark and a bit grim." They lead out into these wonderful courtyards, and they lead out into small bars and brass rubbing centres, and you don't know what. And they're a great place to see things that you wouldn't otherwise see, and to relax, because the Royal Mile in the summer can be incredibly busy, incredibly noisy. But you can find peace and quiet 10 feet away by just wandering down one of the closes, emerging into a courtyard and sitting down.